Hi, everyone. Thank you. my name is Deborah, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Deborah.
I heard this weekend somebody say share the message, not the mess. So I thought of that on the way here tonight. I really feel like pretty much my life has brought me right here tonight to you to speak. I kind of live my life that way now. It's really about my journey, you know, my spiritual journey. Because all my other journeys really ended up with broken hearts, fear, resentment, everything that I live with up until I met my sponsor a year ago and went through the steps. So, like I was telling Tara tonight, that I've been around here I've been in AA supposedly since for 20 years almost. And I was thinking today, it's amazing how long we can go through life suffering and breathe and stay alive and be sick. The human body is amazing. Well, mine, you know, when you look back, when I look back, I think of how many times my life was spared because I pretty much was trying to kill myself my whole life. My parents are both from Ireland, and so that probably says a lot. I can just stop right now, actually. And they were Irish Catholics. So full of guilt, you know, if you do this, God's going to punish you. And pretty much that's how I've thought of my higher power up until just recently. You know, I do this, you do that sort of thing. As a child, it was a real bad childhood, you know, if you want to look at it, good, bad, or whatever. I believe that our lives are just circumstances that lead us to hopefully an awakening, right? So my father was a rager and an alcoholic, and my mother was not such a nice lady, because she was also suffering. My family had a religion, okay? And that was just going to church. My father would fall asleep and my mother would cry, you know, so it was just a lot of pain. And, you know, I believe, like I said, our experiences mold us. So, you know, all those things that I learned as a child, there was abuse. I mean, I was a pretty happy kid until the abuse started happening. I remember being pretty free. My grandmother used to call me a babe in the woods because I would run around, and I was a free spirit. I think I've always been a free spirit, and that's pretty much what's kept me alive. But, you know, as a child, there was a lot of abuse and betrayal and beatings, and it was like my father took his rage out on me because I didn't, you know, listen. I didn't listen. You know, when you're an Irish girl, supposedly, first of all, you should have been a boy, and then, that you're a girl is like bad luck. And then you're supposed to take care of everybody. You know, your life is just, you know, useless. That's pretty bad, but that's how it felt, right? So, I did the whole grammar school, high school, Catholic deal. And, I never felt good enough. I always felt like I had to prove myself to everyone. Because I didn't feel like I got the love at home. I mean, I see that now, but I didn't know what was happening at the time. So, you know, since there was abuse, I really couldn't learn. I didn't learn. I had a lot of hyperactivity problems. I was the class clown. I was really good at comic relief. You know, it's like, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking a clown goes into a party, right? And they don't really have a plan of how they're going to make people laugh. They just take all the circumstances around them and create something funny out of it, right? That's what I did my whole life. I took the circumstances around me and tried to make something funny out of it when I was really dying inside. It's like I never really lived at all until last year, which seems pretty, like, weird or crazy. It's like I had this life that was just, you know, alcoholism was a veil on my life, always a veil. It was just like a screen that was over my face my entire life. And it wasn't until I did the steps that it was lifted. And how beautiful is that, right? There's hope right there. So, you know, my defenses that brought me through life, my mechanisms, my way to cope with situations, was just a way of getting by, you know, and a lot of them turned out to be my character defense. I really had no role model. I had no tools, absolutely no tools and no role model. So what happened was, as soon as I could drink, it was just so perfect. It was serendipity. I had arrived. Life was all of a sudden really, really good. And I would do anything to get to that feeling again. Anything. There were a couple of things that saved me as I was young, you know, as a child, and one of them was athletics. I became really obsessed with athletics because I was getting attention from my family, and it kept me, you know, I realize now it just really kept me in the moment. And that's all I ever wanted to be, was in the moment, like I was as a child, and how we're all born, you know, we're born in the moment. And we stay in the moment for a while until, I guess, certain things happen, and then we get our defenses and life goes on. We get more calloused and scarred, you know. And it's not that I had, you know, bad luck. It was just my circumstances. I see that today. Those were also my resentments, which I see today. And so as soon as I drank, that was it. I always drank more than my friends. I always had to have before and after the party, but you know, I was, you know, in sports. I did really well. I got a full scholarship to college, and you know, I played softball. I was a pitcher. I was a fast pitch pitcher, and talk about being in the moment. It was unbelievable. You know, I wouldn't hear or see anything but the catcher's mitt and my coach talking real low in the background. And I did that for years. But that saved me from drinking myself to death. Because at that time, I had something else to do that kept me occupied, that made me feel good. So that's how I got to college. I mean, there's so many drinking stories. It's unbelievable. You know, we all have them. You know, let's put it this way. I drank and did every drug I could find until I ended up in rehab, arrested, or passed out. Yeah. More, more, more. Give me more, more, more. That's my middle name. You know, but I see now the reason I wanted more, more, more was because I was in such pain. Pain. So if my pain gets taken away, I'll do what I gotta do to get it. And that's just how it worked, you know. And I remember getting that perfect buzz early on and then just trying to find it forever. And, you know, not worrying about circumstances, broken relationships. The truth is I could really care less. Really. When you look at it. You could say here is love and happiness, peace, serenity. And here's heartache, trauma, car accidents, jail, rehabs. And the bottle's right here. And I would just pick the bottle up and drink. I had no defense against the first drink. Okay, so, you know, all these things happen. I get through college. I failed out of college because I thought I could just go to practice and not to school. And I found out that couldn't happen, you know. And I failed out. I went home and I worked three jobs. That was me, you know. Everything fall apart and I'd work my butt off, get it together, and then everything, get stuff together, get everything back together and crash again. So that's how I lived. And so I went to, I got home from college. I couldn't hold a job because I would drink. By this time, I'm drinking alone because, you know, I can't drink with people. I don't want to, you know, they might want some, you know. No, that's out. You know, I'm alone with the bottle and, you know, don't even give me the glass or the ice. I don't need that anymore either. So I ended up, you know, I ended up going to AA. And I went to my first meeting. I couldn't believe I didn't drink. Now, the first, like, 3 weeks, I had a six-pack in my trunk. I'd go home and drink it, or more, way more, you know, whatever. And every night I was going to quit. And then one night I didn't drink. Couldn't believe it. It was a miracle. Happened again. I got a sponsor who yelled at me all the time. That's what I was used to, so it worked. And, you know, so I didn't drink for 10 years. Absolute, really miracle. It was grace at its best. And I found that I never knew how unhappy I was until I started living. I never knew how unhappy my whole life was until I did the steps. It's, you know, like, it's really a simple program, you know. And I was in AA. I never did the steps. I did fellowship, you know, don't drink and go to meetings, you know, that kind of thing. And I was obsessed with working. I became a workaholic. And I made a lot of money. And I had all the best things. Anything I wanted, I could have. And I was sick. I had a soul sickness. It didn't matter what I had. I was still sick. It didn't matter if I had $1 million, $100,000. I was in pain. So I found all these things didn't work. And then between 2001 and 2006, I went to, what happened was I went into this long-term treatment program. I wrote a letter home to my mom. I said, these girls here are really sick. They're like the worst case scenario, right? It was a long-term inpatient. I said, these girls are so sick. They've been to like 10 rehabs and stuff. She writes me back and says, you've been to 16. Detoxes, rehabs, or, you know, just hospital visits. At the end, how I drank was, it was to kill myself. But I didn't say, I'm going to kill myself tonight and drink a, you know, I used to drink a 1.75 liter of vodka in a day. I went into the hospital and they couldn't believe my blood alcohol level. They couldn't believe it. They'd rush me right into the emergency room. That happened three times. And right at the end here, what happened was I would be somewhere by myself. I'd end up with no alcohol. And it would be like a Sunday morning. And I'd be in Connecticut or something. They don't serve till noon. And I would know I was dying. Like, I really believe I was dying. I could feel my life leaving my body. It was just like rolling out of me through my hands and my feet and like my head. I felt like I was dying. And I prayed. I said, God, don't let me die here right now. And I'd get alcohol, I'd drink, and start all over again. And then it would happen again. Because I was drinking so heavy that it was apparently, I mean, something had to happen, something had to give. Happened again. And then I would, my friends always came in, broke in, brought me to a detox or a rehab. I ended up in Pennsylvania in a hospital. And I couldn't, this is what happened with two. I would shake so bad, my legs couldn't support me. I would collapse. Like going for the bottle from here to there, I'd collapse. You know, and it doesn't really matter how I drank. It's the way I drank and what I did, why I drank. And why I drank was because I had a spiritual malady, an obsession of the mind. If I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. You know, it's a phenomenon of craving, right? Once I take the first drink, I want more and more and more until, you know, I pass out, die, or collapse. It's just a never-ending cycle. So what happened was, my brother was getting married last August, and I went to Ireland. I got kicked off the plane twice. I went to another rehab after that, and I saw my luggage in the room, and I said, whose luggage is that with the standby all over it? They're like, that's your luggage. I had standby, standby, because I kept getting on a plane and they kept kicking me off. So, and I'd say, you know what, I missed my flight last night. And she said, no, ma'am, you were kicked off the plane again. You know, I was in a blackout. What else is new, right? And the look on that woman's face when I went to get my ticket the last time, I will never forget as long as I live. This is kind of where my spiritual journey starts happening. Because there was a change. There was sort of a change. I saw that woman's face, the way she looked at me. I would have never seen that. That was a spiritual awakening. That was the first one. I went to Ireland almost, drank myself to death. My family had to send somebody over to get me. Got me home, and I was coming home. I somehow got a bottle. I had my whole family of relatives, Irish relatives around me, protecting me from drinking. I somehow got a bottle. I don't remember. I had a full bottle of Smirnoff. Not my type, but I'll drink it. So what I did is I had it under my bed every night there. And every night I said, I'm going to drink that tonight. I'm going to drink that tonight. I'm going to drink that tonight. I didn't do it. I got home, and the person who picked me up was in the airport with me. And all I did was watch the luggage go around. And the first thing I did was put my hands on it to see if it was wet or not, if the bottle had broke. And it didn't. I was home run. I knew when I got home, the first thing I was going to do was open that suitcase, get rid of who picked me up, and start drinking. And that's what I did. And for me, that was nirvana. Okay, that was it. All I thought about was that bottle from the minute I left till the minute I got home. That's all I thought about. That's my whole life. Like I said, a veil over my face. And so then my brother's getting married. I'm drinking in my house, and I don't get an invitation to the wedding. My mother says, I call my mother. I said, Ma, what's going on? I didn't get an invitation, but that's okay because I didn't collect my mail for a month anyway. So where the hell is it? You know, I don't know. But I must have messed it up. And she said, you didn't get an invitation because you're not invited. So I was like, oh, my God, this can't be. So she called me back the next day and said, well, your brother doesn't want you to come, but his fiancée does. So I went to the wedding. And this is where things started happening, too. I was detoxing myself. If you know the horrors of that. And I just kept saying, I can't drink, can't drink, can't drink. And I had a friend come over, and we're hanging out, talking negative, as usual. The whole world's negative, right? Whatever. And I'm like, look, I can't drink, I can't smoke, I can't do any of that. I can't. I got to stay sober. So he's about to leave, and he says, you know, goodbye, and he hugs me. And when he hugs me, I pass out or something. I fall on the ground in my house. And I just want to say that I went to hell for about 3 or 4 seconds at that moment. I don't know if I was passed out awake, if it was the DTs, whatever it was a God shot. And it said, look, if you keep living like this, you're going to die. So I was like, I was yelling, and he said, you were screaming, God help me, God help me. And then he left, and he never came back, which was good, because I had a problem with this guy coming around. God takes care of us, right? And so that's the first thing that happened. Then I went to the wedding, I didn't drink. But I'll tell you, I wanted to drink more than anything I ever wanted in my life. I wanted to drink so bad. I had no program. I had nothing. So, and then after that, I went to a meeting, like I always go. And this is where everything changes. And it's so beautiful. Because, you know, when you hear that, you know, you hear people say, keep coming back, right? Well, that's true. Keep coming back, man. Keep coming back. Because that's my story. I sat in a meeting that I had been sitting in for 2 years. I'm sitting in the back. It's like a Friday night. And Phil from this group came to speak there in Newton, New Jersey. It's like, I live like 45 minutes from here or something. And he's sitting up there and he's speaking and he says, God is everything. And all the rest is my thinking. And I said, wow, man. That's good. That's true. And I didn't know what it meant, but I knew what it meant. And then I started listening at that moment. I had never listened in a meeting ever before. Really listened. And then he said, the first couple of pages of the big book are blank, and it's because if you do nothing, you get nothing. Something like that. And I said, wow, that's me. I've done nothing. I have nothing. Nothing. I'm empty. I'm dead, man. I'm dead. I don't want to be dead. I didn't say that then. That's how I feel now. You know, he said that, so I said, I got to talk to this guy. This guy is super cool, man. I like the way he sat. I like the way he presented himself. He was cool, but he wasn't cocky. It was just like it's that thing you see in people, and you don't know what it is, but you want it. So I went up to him, I said, where's the meeting? And he's like, Bernardsville. And he's like, oh, I said, I'll see you Tuesday. He's like, okay, sure. Yeah. You know, he said, be there. My girlfriend's there. Great group of girls. So I get here and I get to the meeting. I raise my hand because they were supposed to raise. I raised my hand. I couldn't believe it. And they said, you need someone to take you through the steps? I said, yeah, me. And then a bunch of people raised their hand. The meeting was over. And Rose came up to me and said, so what happens to you when you drink? I said, I have to go to the hospital to detox. She said, oh, okay. So she said, well, this is Nicoletta, and she's going to take you through the steps. No, she said, I think she asked me, do you want to stop? And I said, sure. Yeah, are you willing to go to any lengths or something like that? And I said, yeah, sure. Yeah, right. I didn't know. No. I was never going to stop drinking. Are you kidding? So, but I'm trying. You see, I always made it look like I was trying. I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in rehab. That's trying, isn't it? That's trying. It's my money. You know, everybody shut up and leave me alone. I'll spend all this money and see how hard I'm trying. I'm such a bad case. So, and then she said, you're going to meet with Nicoletta on Tuesday or something, like Thursday. I said, I don't think so, because I'm going down the shore and I'm going to be down there. And she says, and I said, well, I don't feel like drinking. And she goes, you don't feel like, this is where her kind of character defect maybe, which God uses, B-I-T-C-H came up. So I was like, she goes, you don't feel like drinking? I said, I don't feel like drinking. She goes, you'll drink. You always drink. And I said, oh my God, she's right. I always drink. I always end up drinking. And along with that goes lots of disappointment and pain to my family and people I love. Yeah, I always drink. So I said, okay, I'll come back and I'll meet with Nicoletta. And I came back the first day. I was late. I said, I'm never late, but I'm late right now. And she's like, okay, well, there has to be some willingness here. So I said, oh man, these people are serious, man. These people are really serious here. Holy crow, right? So that was cool. And then Nicoletta, you know, as far as sponsorship goes, I think that there's no greater thing in the program than sponsorship. If someone doesn't take the time, out of their heart, to help you, you really don't have a chance. And that's love. That's God. That's God moving. That's love. You know, AA, you can walk anywhere you walk in the room to a meeting, you're accepted. No matter what your thoughts, how crazy, how bad you've been, no matter what you've done, you're accepted. It's a program of unconditional love. And I never had that. I never gave myself the chance to have that. I would rather kill myself than take that chance and not let it happen, you know. So I saw this girl who was teaching me the steps, who was consistently the same. I'd go back every week, and she's the same. Giving, loving, beautiful. I'd say she's going to be different this time. Because nobody can be like this. But it's true, you know. And from there I grew because I saw that and I started to flourish. I started to see and hear things. I started to have an awakening. I have an awakening every day I see things. Because God's with me all the time and always has been. I just didn't know it, you know. And so the first step, you know, I really didn't ever understand the steps. I would say I did, but I never understood them because I feel like to understand the steps, you have to feel the steps. You have to feel them. You can't say, oh, I'm an alcoholic and I'm powerless over alcohol. I said that like a parrot. I knew I was an alcoholic somewhere down the line, but I didn't feel it. I didn't feel like I was an alcoholic, so I couldn't help anyone. I couldn't help myself. I couldn't live. I couldn't live. I couldn't laugh. I couldn't be a good sister, daughter, companion, friend. I didn't even have a clue of what I was like. You know, it's like, I can't even say I spent all these years looking for myself because I didn't. But when I did find the kind of person I am, it's completely opposite than anything I thought I was. You know? And, you know, it's like I was reborn. Really. Because it's a renewal. It's renewed, you know? It's different. It's changed completely. And I'll do anything to hold on to it now. I'll do anything to hold on to it. So we did the first step, and I did it, and then one day we were driving together somewhere, and I used to get an hour and a half with her, like, once a week, and I looked forward to being with my sponsor and sharing the time, and I told her one of my, she said, this is what she said to me, I'm not a drama coach, and I'm going to teach you this, I'm going to bring you through the steps, and to God, and then that will solve all your problems, but I'll be here for you, but those two things will solve your problems, and it's the truth, that is the truth. And that's the truth. And it's good to know the truth, because the truth will set you free, right? So there we are. The truth, freedom. It's yours, Deb, if you want it. You know, and that's me. I don't want to, I'm good at sabotaging things. So there were times when I really wanted to drink. I'll tell you, the first 90 days I drove to meetings. I was with my mother, who I probably shouldn't have been with. I was in church crying. I'd go to church and sit there and cry because I didn't know what else to do. Or I was in a meeting. I only felt good at those times. I was hanging on by the skin of my teeth. So what happened was, we went through the first couple of steps. But the first step is I was telling her some story, and she said, lack of power is your dilemma. Go to the power. I was like, oh, that's cool. Lack of power is my dilemma. Go to the power. That's when I started going to God with everything, man. Everything. You know, my sobriety is based on my spiritual condition, right? It is. It is. And, you know, it says spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Live it. That means when you wake up in the morning, when you're breathing, you're living. That's how I try to start my day and live my life now. So, the first, I never really said, okay, I'm going to do the steps and I'm going to stop drinking. That was too much for me to say. That was too much to say, okay, I'm going to do these steps and then I'm not going to want to drink anymore. Yeah, I don't think so. You know what I mean? That's not how I operate. So I said, I'll do it because everybody else seems to be doing it. And my sponsor's so cool, and I'd like to be like her. Okay? So I'll do what she does to see if I can be like her. So I did the first step, the second step. It's almost like I did the first three steps in less than 30 days. I was on my fourth step, and I was on vacation, and I called her, and I said, look, I'm going to go to another meeting. And she said, you're going to go to another meeting? I said, yeah. She goes, well, you've been going to meetings your whole life, and you kept drinking. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I started writing my fourth step. That's when things really changed. I did my fourth step, and I really, you know, even like in the beginning of it, I saw, my third step was like this. I was so afraid. And I imagined myself on a cliff, and I threw myself off the cliff into what I call my higher power's arms. It was like that song from Tom Petty, Free Falling. When I hear that song, I think of it. That's how I did my third step. I just threw myself in. You know, I didn't say I was going to turn my will over or nothing. I just threw myself in. That stuff came later. Then I saw the fourth step. I did the four steps, and right in the, like towards the beginning, I called her. I said, look, you know, I can really see that all of this stuff really doesn't even make sense. It's kind of stupid. She's like, great, keep writing. And that's the truth. I could see my fourth column, how I was creating the whole mess, but it wasn't really my fault. It was just the way I was, you know, the way I was conditioned. You know, so all those things, I did that. And then my fifth step, I went and did it with her. And she made me sit in the room for an hour afterwards to go over everything. And that was so neat because I did it. And I thought of the first drink I had till the minute I was sitting there at that moment. And it all, and I said to myself, you poor girl. Not pity. It wasn't pity. It was like sorrow. It was sorrow. Is that I had to live that way. And I had to feel that way so long. So that was cool. My brother's in AA. I called my brother. I said, Paul, I just did the fifth step. I'm not feeling this closeness to my creator thing. He's like, don't worry about it. It's all good, Deb. It's all good. So 2 days later, I'm driving home from here. And I'm going into my house, and I had this feeling of letting myself off the hook for my whole life. And it was like I took a coat off a hook. It was literally like that. I just went, okay, you don't have to be funny. You don't have to try to, you know, be impress people. You don't have to be an awesome salesperson. You don't have to win, win, win. You don't have to be a millionaire. You're off the hook. And I went home and wrote that down. That was October 16th. Because it was so unbelievably powerful. And I've never put myself back on again. I've let myself off, and I've never gone back on that hook. And then, you know, I went to some women's workshops. I think the 12-step workshops are the best thing that anybody can do, even if you're just starting or if you know someone who hasn't done the steps or if you need a referral. I think you can go to them for the rest of your life because you hear different things. And you may not always hear everything for you. You may be hearing something that you're going to help your sponsor with. You know, it becomes a life of service. It's not about you anymore. It's not. It never was. Hello? It never really was. And you see, I said before, if you see a man in service, you see a happy man. A happy man. So, so then the fifth. I like to talk about the steps because that's really what changed me, and that's why I talk about the steps. So then the fifth step, I saw my resentments, and I was screaming. I was screaming at her in the room. She's like, all right. She let me, but I was screaming. I was so angry about some things. Screaming. And so I saw my character defects, of course. You know, they were blaring. And then the seventh step is to remove my shortcomings so I can help other people. Because when I'm all caught up in my defects and me, 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 I can't help anyone. I can't help myself. Can't help myself. I can't help an old lady walking the street. Crossing the street, if I'm in my character defects, up in them. I don't see anything but me. But I, you know, like I said with Rose, I see how God, you know, removed my character defects when you see fit and what you want me to keep and what you don't want me to keep. The things I think are good for me may not be. And the things I think are bad for me may be just what God needs to get through to someone that night or that day. You know? I needed someone aggressive up in my face. I needed my sponsor just the way she was. I was blessed. I was blessed. I am blessed. Every single day I'm blessed. So then the seventh, you know, eighth, list, the list. Then the amends. That's where the freedom started happening big time for me. But before that, you know, at the workshop, I was told to start meditating. And I was, am I all right?
You're doing good.
All right. I was told to start meditating, right? So I said, that's all right, whatever. Another all right, whatever thing. So, okay, you can't do it. Just set your microwave for 3 minutes and just sit there. So I did. I went home and did that, went home and did that, went home and did that. Boom. Another spiritual awakening. I saw a waterfall of golden light that was eternal, giving, beautiful, flowing. And at that moment I said, I have never been hurt. I can't be hurt, and I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be fine. I was always fine, and I'm going to be fine. Because I saw that, some people call it your soul, but I saw an awareness. I saw something in myself that I had no clue what it was. And again, that was like a God shot. It was grace, because I didn't deserve it. I don't deserve anything I've got. I've ran away from God. I always tried to live a good life as far as being kind. You know, I've always considered myself a kind person. You know, maybe I'm not, but I've always considered myself as one. Because I was really never vindictive. I would never say I'm going to hurt that person and hurt them. I just didn't have it in me, you know. So I saw that place, and then I knew that there was a God at that moment. I knew that there was something else besides me. There was a source. There was an energy. There was something out there. You know, and then I started seeing nature, you know. It was like I woke up. It was like I woke up. And then, so I did my ninth step, you know, and that was the way it was supposed to be. And it took me a year to do all of them. And the ones I thought were the easiest were the ones I put off to the last minute, was my brothers and my family. I did my mother right away. That was easy. My brothers I put off, and I just did them recently, just last month. It took a whole year. Timing wasn't right, you know, whatever. No, it was right. I wasn't ready. Okay, so then, you know, and then there's so much freedom in that because, you know what? You can hold your head up. I can hold my head up. You know, I've done wrong. I've been an alcoholic. I lived a crazy life, you know. But now, you know, I still have to do financial amends as far as credit cards and stuff. And that's on my mind. And, you know, it gets to, like, where being in it is too painful that the amends has to happen. It has to happen. It's like a big ball that's going to pop. And it becomes painful to not do the amends. That's how it is for me, that I have to do it. I was just recently away on vacation last week, and I saw some friends who I needed to do amends to. And I did them. In the parking lot after dinner, I took one. I said, boom, did them. And, you know, there's freedom in that, right? So then the 10th step has been the best step ever. I love prayer and meditation. And what I found out in meditation is I can feel my feelings and live. First time I was sitting, I was in my house, and I started meditating. I don't know what meditating is. I just close my eyes and clear my mind so God can come in. Contemplation, meditation is the highest form of prayer. That's what I've read. So that means I never gave space in my mind for anything but my sick thinking. And then I said, I open it up. I said, God, it's open. Please come in. And I try to just have space, emptiness, so God can come in. And even if I'm on vacation, I got to do it. And even if it's sitting in a bathroom, sitting on a pillow in a bathroom to get away from my friends, I do it. It's like my breath. I have to do it. And all it is for me is clearing my mind so I can have guidance and wisdom. You know? In the Bible, wisdom is a female. I try to have wisdom if I can. So I open my mind up, I do that. And then another thing I learned, my sponsor said to me, I said, well, I get these feelings and I want to run. And she says, well, what I do or what I did is when I'm in meditation and feelings come up, I say to myself, don't move. Don't move. Because I could eat a candy bar or call somebody and complain about something. Don't move. And through don't move, I had some of the most wonderful moments. What came up for me right away was sorrow and anger. And there was nothing attached to it. It was just the feeling, sorrow, anger. They came up, I dealt with them, and I got through them. And they weren't even that long, and it wasn't even that painful. So that's why when I sponsor girls, I say, you got to sit, man. You got to sit. It's because it's a really beautiful journey. It's just about finding out about yourself and that you really can handle everything with God and the steps and AA and sponsors and, you know, fellowship. It's, you know, you can do it all. You can do it all. You can have a beautiful life. It's open to everyone. It's open to everyone. And it's amazing how many people don't do the steps and how many people don't give themselves that chance. And you know, another thing my sponsor said to me, and I keep repeating in my head, it's okay not to know. It's okay not to know. I'll say, what should I do? This or that? You don't need to know. It's okay not to know. It's okay not to know today. Which is really crazy, right? Because I got to know. I got to be, you know, I got to know what's next. I don't really got to know anything anymore. You know, God will provide. So then, you know, prayer and meditation, conscious contact is where it is for me. If I'm not living, you know, all God, you know, all the time, which I really try and it's really a way to go, I get, you know, I'll get backwards and I'll get uptight. I'll get angry. I'll get selfish. I'll get lonely. I won't be a nice person.
I may come across as that I'm a nice person, but you know what? I'm manipulating something, man. Where, you know, what's my motive today? Where am I? What's my motive? Okay, and then 12, the best part of the whole program, helping someone else. So many times I text my sponsees, like today, and I am telling her exactly what I need to do at this moment. It's like we're mirrors. We mirror each other. I think human beings need teachers. And a teacher is a mirror, right? And I can almost see what they're going to do before they do it sometimes, my sponsors. I mean, my sponsees, but that's cool. You know, I'm here. And then I thought one night, you know, it's like a sponsor is someone who, you know, when you're driving at night and someone flicks the high beams and you go, is that a joke, man? Is that a joke? Is there a cop coming? They fooling me? Are my lights off? Like, warning. There's a cop waiting for you. I'm like, yeah, right? No, there is a cop waiting for you. It's like your sponsor flicks the high beams and says, probably not a good idea to do that. Right? And you say, well, I'll try it anyway. Sure enough, it doesn't work. It's trial and error, right? Life is trial and error. So I guess I'll end here, but the most important thing for me, or the most revolutionary change in my life, was the rearrangement of my thoughts. You know, I was just on vacation, and there were the meetings were great, and there was a girl there, and I had heard that she was a big mess, like a real big mess, like kind of like you, Deb. That's what, you know, my friends were saying. You know, her name is Cynthia. She's a real big mess, but she's an artist, right? She's an artist. So I was walking down the street, and I looked over, and I saw her in the morning going into her gallery, and she had a huge, like, painting in her hand, and she smiled at me, and she had, like, a customer behind her, and she, like, went right into, she swung, like, right into the room. It was all so graceful and beautiful, and I looked at her, and I said, that's sobriety, man. That's sobriety. And there was another thing that happened was I was walking home at night with a friend, and I heard girls singing in a bar. Like, you know how little school girls sing? And it's such a beautiful sound. That's what it sounded. They were doing karaoke, and they were drinking, and they were drunk. And I went in, and I saw them, and I experienced the happiness of it, the carefree. But they were drinking, and I can't. And I wasn't envious that I couldn't. See, that's a spiritual awakening, too. To see that girl and say, wow, that's sobriety. I want that. And then to hear those girls singing and say, that's their life. They can do that. I've done that already. I'd rather be who I am today and sing my own song. And I read, life is like a wild tiger. You can either let it, the tiger, lay its paw on your head and be stuck. That's life, laying life on your head and be stuck, or get on its back and ride. So that's what I'm trying to do today. Thank you.